Well, hey, look who it is. I thought that was you. Get on over here. You're listening to Hypocritical, a podcast by Hypocritic GG. I'm Lou Cheatspeak, and we are talking Baldur's Gate 3 on this episode. And I know what you're thinking. So timely, right? Years after this game came out, huge cultural phenomenon, completely missed the boat. We are nothing if not timely. That's the Hypocritic difference. What I figured we would do with this particular episode is, you know, I recently did finish playing through Baldur's Gate 3, and as a self-professed non-RPG fan and someone who kind of avoids the genre pretty liberally, I thought I would give a little bit of perspective on what it was about Baldur's Gate 3 specifically that made me kind of jump back into that genre and so thoroughly enjoy it, you know, as not something that I typically get into, but it was such an amazing game and I had such a great time with it. Maybe peel back the layers a little bit and come at it from a non-RPG fan perspective. So if you are really into this genre, or you really, really love that game in particular, you can have maybe a different sort of perspective on what someone who's not as engaged with it really appreciated about it. So let's start from the top on that. Like I said, I'm really not a fan of RPGs, you know, more quote-unquote traditional ones in the sense of a game like Baldur's Gate 3 or its predecessors. And it's largely length and depth of gameplay that really becomes an issue, especially as I sort of get older, and maybe a lot of us feel this way when you get to, you know, be a gamer of a certain age. Getting older typically means less and less time for even casual games that you can pick up and play for 10, 15, 20 minutes a time, much less, you know, 40, 60, 80-hour epics that have immense sprawling worlds and character arcs and all this deep lore that you have to keep track of. And it's very hard to stay immersed in that space across all this time if you have to go, you know, days, weeks, months within picking a game up. And in turn, I'm not typically a huge fantasy guy or turn-based kind of strategy fan in an RPG context anyway. When I'm looking for games or searching for games in this kind of space, I'm usually going for RPG mechanics that are wrapped up in other genres and sort of a secondary element as opposed to the main one. You talk about something like the Mass Effect series, Fallout 3 or Fallout 4. That's usually where I would trend with something like that, or strategy or turn-based games that incorporate those mechanics in other ways, like Civ, card games like Pokemon, or, you know, kind of traditional board games if you want a real strategy turn-based approach, or even something like the Paper Mario series, which are, you know, fairly traditional RPGs as they go, but wrapped up in that sort of Nintendo context, which, you know, they do so well, making you like a genre or play a genre that you might not normally do. You know, ARMS is a fighting game for people who don't like fighters. Check. Splatoon is a shooter for people who don't like shooters. Paper Mario, maybe an RPG for people who aren't necessarily a huge fan of RPGs. But that brings us to Baldur's Gate 3 specifically, and what maybe the draw was about that game that made me want to jump in and then stay with it all the way through to the end, because I did get to the epilogue and wrap the whole thing up, and it was quite the ride. So for context, you know, as you might expect, I did not play the first two Baldur's Gate games, nor any of Larian's earlier RPGs or any work from the studio previously. So I was going in essentially completely blind, maybe a little behind the eight ball in that regard, with very, very little context. So this was a completely fresh perspective on that. And this game specifically, you know, its reputations and its reviews really speak for themselves. As of the time of this recording, it sits at a 96 on Metacritic, which is absolutely unheard of. You know, a handful of games across the entire history of the medium have hit that score. Obviously, numerous Game of the Year awards, as you might expect for a production as triumphant as this, right? Including, I believe it was the first game to win Game of the Year at all five major video game award shows, which I had to look up exactly which these were, the Golden Joystick Awards, the Game Awards, the Dice Awards, the Game Developers Choice Awards, and the British Academy Games Awards. I hope you like saying games, because it's gonna pop up a lot. And of course, the sales figures reflect that as well. Something on the order of 10 million copies sold as of February of 2024, all the way in the past. So you can imagine even more momentum across time. A lot of that came with from things like modding support and strong word of mouth, and that's what kind of got me rolling on the whole thing, right? Another major draw of it was that it really was a couples game for myself from the outset. Sarah and I, Miss Nephroptosis, if you frequent the channel at all, she pops in sometimes, really played through it together where I was manning the controller and making a lot of those moment-to-moment decisions, but she would often offer suggestions or perspective on dialogue choices or encounters or major character decisions that really made it a shared experience and was incredibly fun, as we will talk about. And of course, the really religiously faithful translation of traditional kind of D&D gameplay into that video game context. You know, I love D&D myself. I've played it a lot. I've DM'd a lot of campaigns over the years. The world and the mechanics and how all of that builds out is very familiar. So you're not really going in blind in that respect. If you do have some sort of D&D background, it should feel very comfortable and you're going to feel right at home with how a lot of the game is structured and works. Aside from that, you know, there's also an incredible, incredible depth of mechanics where the combinations of, you know, characters, skills, spells, gear, upgrades you can put together are seemingly endless. And no two playthroughs or no two approaches are going to look even remotely similar to each other with all of the ways that you can mix and match and put different sort of upgrades and abilities and combinations on top of each other. It is sprawling to the point of being impossible to basically wrangle with it all. So the player choice and freedom that you get as a result is essentially unparalleled. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and I know I have a fair bit of a naive perspective on it, but you got to admit, there's a lot going on there. It enables you, at least as I found, to engage with battles and exploration and encounters really on your own terms, even if it risks breaking things. So you can have really innovative and creative approaches to different encounters and fights and boss battles and even traversing the world where, you know, as things do kind of get done out of order or you get past certain triggers or events that maybe you're not supposed to. Sometimes it's reflected in the script and the writing where it doesn't quite account for that. We will discuss that as we go. By no means a game breaker. I say that half jokingly and maybe with an asterisk because maybe you can get yourself into a weird state. But at any rate, as this gameplay experience unfolded, I found myself so incredibly immersed in the world it was building, in the characters that I had chosen to surround myself with, and in the incredible depth of gameplay options. I was absolutely itching to get to the next encounter, and to keep pushing myself to explore the combat systems as deeply as I could. Now, this took a fair bit of time to get used to and to warm up to. I think there is a certain degree of meeting the game where it's at that's required in something like this, but we'll touch on that a little bit more, I think. There were so many hooks that once they were in, I found that it was really impossible to let go of this game. So really persistently, Sarah and I would come back to it at pretty regular intervals and stay with it all the way through, you know, all three acts into the epilogue. And for context, the playthrough ran approximately 75 hours clocked on the game. Now, that doesn't count the, you know, endless times that I would restart an encounter or make some decision and go for 15 minutes and then decide, oh, that didn't really work, and then back up to a quick save. You end up quick save spamming a lot. What is it? Save scumming, I think might be the term. You do that a lot. And I found that out the hard way throughout that playthrough. So that, you know, there's obviously, you know, tens of other hours in there. But even that is probably a low threshold compared to, you know, a lot of people having hundreds and hundreds of hours, plural. That's hundreds, plural, and hours, plural, I suppose, of gameplay going from start to finish on their first, you know, run through. And I know that there is so much that I missed. You know, I could build an entirely separate game experience out of just going through and doing things slightly differently. So we'll certainly get into that. So the hooks, like I said, were many and varied, and it was interesting to start understanding how each element of the experience found a way to make it even a little more appealing or a little more addictive and kept me coming back for more when I really, you know, wasn't sure how sold on this I was going to be. So right from the start, familiarity of the world and of the mechanics helped immensely. Like I said, having that D&D background helps with terminology, with world immersion, comfort with the source material, so you don't feel like you're jumping in completely blind, because it can be exceptionally overwhelming, I feel like, for players who maybe aren't as familiar with D&D sort of concepts or have to come at it with a little bit more of a naive perspective, maybe not having done that themselves. You can probably understand how it could be a lot to wrap your head around, even with some familiarity. There was a lot that I needed to wrap my head around, and it took a fair bit of time into Act One to feel fully comfortable with what the game was presenting me with, especially in terms of how do you handle encounters? How does save scumming matter? And how do you kind of present yourself such that you're setting yourself up for success as you go and you can have a good time with it? Obviously, the strength of the writing and the character development is in a game like this is so critical. And it's something that Larian and the game do incredibly, incredibly well. the narrative, the character development, the dialogue, the presentation of it all. It hooks you early and it keeps you invested as romances and relationships develop and you make all these consequential decisions throughout, some more fleeting, some having, you know, extreme ramifications across the world and everywhere in between. So it was always incredibly fun to understand. And this is the appeal with a lot of choice-based RPGs in this sense, right? Understanding how your decisions reflect the world around you and what they're going to do to other people or other things or the road that you're trying to get down for yourself. It's always really interesting and somewhat addictive to start to explore that. And of course, you know, RPGs really do live and die on the quality of their writing and their voice acting in so many ways, and especially so for a game like this, where it leans so heavily into that. Obviously, the voice acting is absolutely impeccable, and awards were won for that, and rightfully so. You know, some of the most iconic performances of the generation, most likely, in terms of what's on offer there. And that sort of immersion, and I put immersion in quotes, where it's not necessarily fidelity-based immersion, and it's not necessarily, you know, the smoothness of animations that makes it immersive, but it's the richness of the world that it builds that really gives that level of feeling like you're there and feeling like you're part of it. And this is a living, breathing place that you have dropped yourself into, which is what a lot of games of this ilk aspire to and don't necessarily always get there for various reasons. Now, it is a little interesting in that sort of break it, who cares, do whatever you want, whenever you want, essentially mentality can lead to inconsistencies and errors where you do kind of pull yourself out of the experience a little bit and say, oh, yeah, you know, remind yourself it's a game. And you know, obviously not all possibilities can be accounted for in a scenario like this. One example that I love to use is, I think, in the beginning of Act 3, where you're just entering, is it Rivington? And there's the Steel Watch at the gate before you can go into Baldur's Gate proper. If you have some sort of teleport, I don't know, you have Dimension Door, you have a spell, you have a different scroll you can use, you can just bypass that whole thing and go straight through like nothing happened, and boom. I basically had to do that in my case because I was having a very difficult time dealing with that particular encounter and knowing I couldn't pass it myself. So you have to come up with creative ways around it. It's great that the game encourages that, but you have those sort of interesting moments where you can kind of nip and tuck at that sort of quote-unquote immersion based on how heavily you want to break it, which I think is interesting. There's also a factor of really wanting to come back to it that was incredibly addictive. Like we were kind of saying before, entire characters, side quests, and pathways through the game can be completely unexplored and completely left on the floor for you to discover when you revisit it. So a second playthrough really can be almost a completely separate game. Now, a lot of RPGs can go this way based on, you know, particular characters in your party and side quests and missions that allows you to do. But it felt especially deep and expansive in the case of Baldur's Gate 3. And I very much do feel that even with a little bit of tweaking and a little bit of conscious decision-making early on, that will sprawl into a completely different experience. You know, I only had three of the six plus party members really available to me, and I didn't even try to explore in that sense. I had Shadowheart, I had Lazelle, and I had Astarion, and that was it. So there's a whole other swath of characters that I just have no experience with. So even swapping one of those out, I feel like would be dramatically different. Entire quests, entire storylines, you know, I was fortunate enough to have the whole Raphael arc happen throughout my playthrough. A lot of people will probably miss it because it can be kind of a narrow way to get into that, right? With only a couple of ways and with how sprawling it gets, you know, it's really easy to miss substantial chunks of the game is what I'm getting at. And so if you allow yourself a second or third or fourth playthrough, you can make it dramatically different and it can feel amazing to experience in that regard. Honestly, it also kind of makes you feel dumb, especially in those early moments and in the first parts of Act 1 where you're still coming to terms with the mechanics and how encounters work and how creative the game really encourages you to be. You can feel like you're not harnessing the full potential of what's on offer because the game is so sprawling and it is so intricate and there is so much you can do. There's so many ways that you can combine abilities and powers and party members and scrolls and spells and items and poisons and alchemy. I didn't do alchemy once. I didn't make a single potion or thing like that. I missed that entire part of it. I'd have to go back and even try that mechanic, let alone get good at it. So there is so much on the table. You can start to feel like you're not doing enough or you're not thinking creatively enough to harness everything that's on offer. And admittedly, there can be a lot of frustration in what at first feel like unfair, and I'm going to put it on unfair in quotes as well, encounters or setups. You can hit really challenging roadblocks where your party is just not well configured for a particular encounter. And there was one, you know, well into Act 2 or 3, where I probably struggled with that for days, just based on how my party was built and needing to think more creatively. Of course, once Sarah got involved and kind of gave me some alternate perspective, it went a lot faster from there. And that sort of ability to have couples playtime with it actually really helped. Sarah was constantly bringing different perspectives and approaches and suggestions to each encounter. And where I would really struggle with something for a very long time, she would make a suggestion that would help me get it right on the first or second attempt after that, and vice versa, where I would come at things with a different perspective than she would, that would end up being more efficient. And that sort of balance that it brings ended up making the game a lot more interesting and engaging overall because of the different ways that we thought about it. And admittedly, there is a little bit of calibration, I think, that you have to do to get yourself to, quote unquote, think a certain way to get fully immersed in the game's offerings and feel like you're actually harnessing everything that it has to its full potential. Now, again, the incredible variety and depth in loot and mechanics and all the different one-off things that you can do make it so unique and so in-depth that you can just come at it over and over and over again. And even if you are doing the same fights against the same bosses, you can have so much variation from setup to setup, from playthrough to playthrough, that they really do feel like entirely different games. And it's incredible how well Baldur's Gate 3 somehow brings all of those disparate elements together and creates something so in-depth, so freeing, where you actually are allowed to have full expression over everything that you're doing, more or less. Any way you want to come at it, anything you want to do, anything you want to prioritize or emphasize. You often see a lot of AAA games and a lot of really big RPGs and, you know, even things in that genre really kind of shoehorning player choice and taking a lot of that liberation and freedom away from the player in service of spectacle or in service of fidelity or in service of storytelling or budget or restrictiveness, whatever the reason is, that is absolutely not at play here. And that sort of immersion question was one that I had thought about a little bit too, where immersion can feel a little different for an RPG like this. There are a lot of bugs, obviously. And now, I played this on Xbox, which I understand is the least polished or maybe the worst version by far. But here you go. It's what you have access to, right? Even with that, you know, there were quite a few bugs. There were some crashes. There were some issues that, you know, prevented progress at certain points. It's gonna happen with a game this big. It's bound to happen. You know, games much, much smaller in scope feel much worse from that perspective. So you do have to give it credit for feeling as stable and as polished as it does. Then other things come up, like wonky animations or traversal issues or some of those weird quality of life things that kind of get in the way. But again, that's not really the emphasis of the experience, right? It does remind you of the game-like nature of it all, but you can go bypass entire scripts and break the whole thing if you want. So it's going to feel like a game no matter what. So they intelligently, I think, lean into what makes the game so good, and they don't necessarily spend their time on some of those other elements that, yeah, would maybe make it a little more polished to look at or a little more refined in just stuff like traversal or things like that. But the immense creativity that's on offer is front and center in the design from moment number one. You feel that no matter your experience level with RPGs, Larian games, Baldur's Gate, whatever it is, the priorities are very clear for all to see. And ultimately, it results in a refreshing and an incredibly well-executed game that is really just a game. It's an incredibly fun game, and you can come at it however you want. There's no predatory or anti-consumer gimmicks. There's nothing sort of tacked on. You don't have loot boxes. There's no season pass. There's no, you know, ending cut out for DLC later on. It is AAA gaming, as a lot of us wish it could be in a lot of ways. So despite my not really being a fan of RPGs, despite my kind of reluctance to engage with this sort of material sometimes, it was absolutely one of the most freeing, most creative, and most entertaining gaming experiences that I've had in a very long time. And I'm very, very glad that I stuck out those sort of initial hesitations, because it is an incredible experience start to finish. If you're anywhere in a similar boat like me, where you've been considering picking up Baldur's Gate, but, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like it, or oh, it seems too complicated, or I don't know about the fantasy stuff. Having been in that boat and you know, been rowing that boat for a long time, I absolutely highly, highly encourage you to pick it up, because it is among the best of its kind. And there's really, at least in the past few years, from my perspective, nothing else that has hooked me as strongly or as unexpectedly in a genre like this that I don't normally frequent. So phenomenal stuff. That brings us to our post-show topics this time around. If you did play Baldur's Gate 3, let us know what you think about it. If you really liked the game, what was it about the game that you really liked? If you didn't enjoy it, if you couldn't get into it, what were those mechanics or problems in your mind that kind of roadblocked you from being able to get as immersed in it? Similarly, and on a different topic like we were talking about, are there any genres across the gaming world and the gaming landscape that you struggle to engage with that you don't find particularly interesting? And if so, were there any games that you played in that genre, or in those genres, plural, if there's more than one, that you actually ended up really clicking with and liking despite not normally playing that sort of thing? Where can you sound off on these topics? On our Discord server, of course. And how do you get there? Hypocritic.gg, of course. It's your hub for all things Hypocritic. Check out our live streams, convention coverage, video reviews, industry interviews, and more, and join that Discord community where you can react to topics we discuss here on the podcast and get the inside scoop on what's coming next from us. Well, thanks so much for listening. Stay fresh, cheese bags. We'll catch you back here real soon.